Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. This time around, I'm trying something different. This edition is going to be released as both an audio podcast and a video podcast. My hope is that they will both be able to stand on their own. When I thought of the subject of this edition, I immediately thought of the video possibilities, but I don't know how often that's going to be possible with normal, whatever that is, digital flotsams. But this edition culminates in a dubious honor I share with my late father. But it all takes place in Coney Island. So there's this place in New York City, well, really in a part of New York City named Brooklyn, and it's called Coney Island. When I was a very young tyke, my grandmother on my dad's side, known to everyone simply as Mom, nobody used her real name ever, and my Aunt Lydia, an evil woman who excelled at the fine art of teasing children, took me to Coney Island. I didn't know it at the time, but this was one of the luckiest days of my life. Because on this day, I got to see Coney Island just before it began its slow decline. Its real peak probably came a decade or two before that, but that summer I got to see Coney Island still in its prime. I guess I should explain to folks who may not know, Coney Island was one of the most amazing and wonderful beachside amusement parks the world has ever known. It is now almost completely gone. That first visit, I was more of an observer than anything else. Mom and Lydia were extreme fans of the rides, as they called them. The more disorienting and frightening, the better. I was pretty young and way too scared of most of these rides. One of their favorites was something called the Virginia Reel. Imagine about a dozen people sitting on the outer edges of a circular car that spins freely as the car travels down a zigzag track like a roller coaster. They would ride it over and over. We eventually made it to a giant 5-acre building called Steeplechase. The front of the building featured a huge, toothy, smiling face that looked like it may have been the inspiration for Mad Magazine's Alfred E. Newman. When you bought your tickets to go inside, you got a big, stiff, circular card dominated by this same face. Each time you rode on a ride, the attendant would punch a hole in the edge of this card until the whole card was used up. Steeplechase was an enormous and cavernous building, inside of which was a huge assortment of totally unique rides. It got its name from a horse racing ride that went totally around the outside of this enormous building. None of these rides could ever exist today in these litigious times. There wasn't a safety belt or a restraining bar in sight. People didn't fall off rides in those days simply because they were smart enough to hold on tight and obey the rules. No other reason. Actually, several of the attractions were designed to make you fall down. There was the human pool table, where a tubular wooden slide just shot you out across a wide expanse of spinning discs, which took quite an effort just to get off of. There was the human roulette wheel, where a large group of people would unsuccessfully attempt to stay in the middle of a huge spinning roulette wheel. Even the entrance and exit was a physical challenge. You entered by walking through this enormous rotating barrel. Falling customers would cause huge stack-ups. The exit featured a maze with metal handrails, and there was a huge audience watching the patrons as they tried to walk over a constantly undulating floor. You had to grab the handrails to keep from falling, but when you did, they gave you a shock. Right at the point where it seemed like you had made it all the way through the maze, the ladies were surprised to find out why there was such a crowd of onlookers. A blast of air would shoot up from a hole in the floor, blowing their skirts high in the air, to the delight of the crowd. I can't imagine anything like this existing today. In just a few days of operations, the lawsuits would put the place out of business. My personal riding was confined to a small area to one side of the building called, embarrassingly, Babyland. As distasteful as it was to enter something called Babyland, I was just too terrified of all the other rides to make any protests. In fact, when we left and had to walk through that maze, and I saw the man in front of us get shocked repeatedly, I started crying and refused to move. They didn't get me to move until they introduced me to the man who was delivering the shocks, and he promised not to shock me. If you remember Digital Flotsam number 48, I had good reason to be terrified of being shocked, as not many years earlier, I had nearly electrocuted myself. These are such vivid and awesome memories, filled with the frustration of knowing that if I had gone through Steeplechase at age 16, I would have gone on all those incredible rides. But by the time I was 16 years old, Steeplechase had closed its doors forever, and the building is now gone without a trace. But some years later, I got the chance to improve on my first Coney Island performance. I'm guessing I was maybe 10 or 11 years old when my dad took me out to Coney Island once again. We never went inside Steeplechase. My dad didn't much care for that place. He hated rides that went in a circle, and Steeplechase was loaded with them. In fact, as we were walking by the entrance, he told me that he once had thrown up on the flying swings and sprayed vomit on the crowds below. No, Dad liked thrill rides, and his goal was to get me to go on all of them. I rode the Virginia Reel, one my grandmother liked so much, the bobsled, which was one of my favorites, and was very much like a real bobsled run, and a few others whose names I have long ago forgotten. I was nervous about the roller coasters, though, and downright terrified of the parachute jump. We stood under the parachute jump for a while with my dad begging me to go on it, but every time a rider would reach the top and get released, they would scream bloody murder, and I just flat out turned yellow. Another regret. I never went on the parachute jump. For a few years after that refusal, each time I was there and willing to give it a try, the parachute jump was closed. It would be closed now and then because of things like high winds or for servicing, but the net result was I never got another chance. It closed for good in 1969. My dad was clever, though. He allowed me to duck the parachute jump only if I would go on that roller coaster. He pointed toward the tornado. I stared for a good minute and then said, "Okay." The tornado was a long, skinny coaster with many fairly low hills and with fairly gentle drops, and it actually rode around the edge of one of the larger blocks. There were attractions and concessions underneath it all the way around. It had very steeply banked turns at each end that made it actually a very smooth ride. Of course, I was terrified. But after only one ride, I wanted to stay on it all day. Well, after around three rides, my father said no more and suggested we try another coaster. We walked along the street, and I looked at the nearest coaster, the Thunderbolt. That one looked a little more imposing to me. It looked steeper. It looked taller. And it was, in fact, all of those things. I began to get nervous all over again, but Dad started walking in the opposite direction. I grabbed my dad's arm and said, "Aren't we going on the Thunderbolt?" Dad just said, "Nah, I want to go on that one way down there." And he gestured towards the Cyclone. I stopped dead in my tracks. The roller coaster he was pointing at looked easily twice as tall as the tornado, and was much steeper looking. I said, "No way. That's much bigger than the one I just went on. Can't we go back to this one here?" He said, "Nah, come on. The Cyclone only looks bigger because it's so far away." To this day, I have no idea why that ridiculous statement worked. But I started walking towards it again, convinced that my eyes were deceiving me somehow. In fact, it was bigger. It was much bigger. The tornado, which I had just enjoyed, had a 50-foot initial drop. The cyclone had an 85-foot initial drop and at a 59-degree incline. Soon we were standing in line at the world-famous cyclone. When it was our turn to get on, the only seat left was at the very front of the front car. First seat over the top. I did not like that idea at all, but my father was overjoyed. He said the best seats are the very first and the very last. We got in. My father first, then me. The attendant lowered the lap bar that was supposed to keep us in our seats. It lurched forward startlingly, went around a right-hand turn, and then the chain link grabbed us and we began to be towed up the first hill. I could see immediately this was a very bad idea. My father began telling me about how this was his favorite roller coaster, how I was going to love it, how I should see how long I could hold my hands up in the air and not hold on. I gripped the bar in front of me with all my might. My hands were turning white. I was feeling like I was going to faint. As we crested the top of the hill, we were up so high, I was sure we could see Europe from there if I only had the nerve to look out at the ocean. We started over the edge, extremely slowly at first, the weight of the other cars holding us back. I looked down. I couldn't even see the track ahead. We were clearly about to fall straight down. I closed my eyes and scrunched down in the seat as far as I could force myself. The last car made it over the top and we took off. The sensation of free falling was overwhelming. I braced for impact. When the car reached the bottom of the arch, my face slammed into the bar I was holding so tightly, breaking my beautiful new Ray-Ban sunglasses against my forehead. The rest of that ride is a complete blur. All I remember is that from the moment I banged my head, I wanted it to be over. It was the longest minute and 50 seconds of my life. The car entered a wooden tunnel, and it quickly slowed to a stop. My father said, "Let's do it again." I looked at him as though he was a complete stranger and shouted, "No way! No way!" My father handed an attendant a wad of cash, and he walked away. I pulled up on the lap bar. It wouldn't budge. My father hadn't been talking to me when he said, "Let's do it again." He was talking to the attendant, who had instantly relocked our lap bar. I was about to go around again. I felt around on my forehead. I wasn't bleeding, but a lump was forming. My father said, "You know, you may get a black eye from that one. Don't put your head down like that again. You have to sit up. Relax, enjoy it." I was heading up that long hill again. Only this time it was different. I knew what was going to happen. If I could keep from banging my forehead on anything, I'd probably survive. And I might even like it. I was on my way to cyclone addiction and an even more dubious one.
Whiplash in my neck stiff. Broke my sunglasses and got scared as shit. Got a raw throat and I got burnt by the sun. On the cyclone, on the cyclone, on the cyclone, I had fun.
After a lunch of foot-long hot dogs and papaya juice, we were back on the cyclone for another half dozen rides. I even held my hands up for a few seconds here and there. Oh, yeah, dubious honor. As far as I know, my father and I are the only father and son team to be issued trespass warnings by the police never to return to the cyclone. I'm serious. When I was almost 30 years old, I went to the cyclone for perhaps the last time. My father, who was almost 50 at the time, and I were doing our customary cyclone rides and re-rides on a hot summer night. Long ago, I had mastered riding the entire ride without ever holding on, hands raised over my head the whole way. My dad, because of an old injury he had, had to hold on to one of his arms with his other hand because if he let it swing up and over his head too far, it might come out of its socket, which was rather painful. In our need for greater thrills, we had latched on to a process where, if we were sitting in the first seat especially, we could wedge our feet against the front of the car and stretch until our backsides were off the seat. In the video version, I'll show you a picture where a guy is doing exactly that. The effect is that as you go down the steepest drops, you're virtually standing up. Very tiring, but very thrilling, and probably very dangerous. There's not much holding you in at that point. Well, Dad and I were doing it over and over. Each time we'd return to the station, the attendants would yell at us and tell us we had to sit down. We would say we were going to, but of course, we didn't. After about three times repeating this lie, the manager came to our car and said, "We're not playing games here, fellas. If you do it again, I'm gonna have you guys thrown out of here." Of course, we did it again, but it seemed as if they didn't care anymore because they never said a thing, and we rode yet another time. Only this time, when the ride was over, there were two uniformed New York City police officers waiting for us as we came to a halt. They told us to get out of the car. They asked us for our IDs, and they wrote down our names and such, handing the sheet of paper to the Cyclone's manager. They told us that if we ever came back, we would be arrested. We never rode the Cyclone together again. Not because of the warning, actually, but because soon after that night, I moved to Florida, and I've never been back. My father, however, still rode it after that, and continued to ride roller coasters well into his 70s. In fact, I have a picture of us where my dad's in his 70s on a roller coaster in Busch Gardens, Tampa, sitting together with me, going down a hill with our hands over our heads. Coaster fans forever. There you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. I hope you enjoyed my little multimedia, multi-format experiment. As always, detailed show notes can be found by going to digitalflotsam.org. And now, as always, in case you were wondering, Big Al Waller tells us...
And P.W. holded the microphone.